The Buddha taught that one of his more famous quotes and misunderstood quotes, he said that the mind is luminous. The mind is luminous. And what he meant, I forget the Pali word for luminous, the Pali word for mind is citta, but what he meant is that the mind is clear, it can observe itself. It can, it's not one thing, it can actually watch itself and see itself in action. And this is very important for tonight's talk. I originally was going to call tonight's talk Storms of the Mind, but I'm going to change it to something else, and I'll explain what in a second. But when the mind is overcome with an emotional state, or with especially with a state of anger or fear or resentment or guilt or regret, the mind can be taken over, almost like we're trapped in a storm that blows every, it feels like it blows everything in the mind about. We can be consumed, especially by thought worlds of stories about how we've been poorly treated, or we've been we've made a terrible mistake that has ruined our life, or we can get trapped in trying to figure out exactly how the future is going to play out when there's a crucial bit of information that we don't know, whether we're going to get a job or not, or what job we should take, or what's going to happen with something in our lives, our health, our financial situation. So the mind can be overcome by fear, anger, and regret, and other self-centered thought worlds that can completely swoop us up. And the one thing all these thought worlds have in common is that they're a pretty miserable place to be when you're in them. There's nothing more uncomfortable than when the mind is completely caught up in a repetitious story that pounds its way, and a stressful body state, and just in a feeling of completely being taken over. Now, I don't want to use the metaphor of storms, because while it's a good metaphor in the sense that it shows not only that storms are very physical as well as visual events, and mind states where we're caught in fear and anger and regret can be very physical as well as mental. But I'm going to instead use a new metaphor for me, which I like. I thought this up just last night. Horror movies. I like the horror movie metaphor for a couple of different reasons. The first reason is that generally when we're watching a horror film, we're pretty stressed out. But there's also, in horror movies, if you've ever seen a horror movie, there's always a character that does something that no normal human being in their right mind would do. In a house where blood has been envisioned flowing from keyholes, or ghosts have been heard wandering around, some intrepid soul, without bothering to turn on the lights, will walk up a set of creaky stairs where moaning has been heard emanating from, and very slowly open up a door that creaks, looking into a room where, you know, it's been rumored that a body was buried. I don't know. Anyway. And every normal person who watches these films sits there and screams, "What are you doing? Get out of the house. Call the police. Don't you have a cell phone? What is your fucking problem?" You know, etc. So when we watch these films, we always see how the protagonist is bringing it on themselves. And that's a very key point to this metaphor, because storms we have nothing to do with. Storms come in real life, and they just blow in and they blow out. But really, we don't play any role in the weather. We really don't. But with the protagonists in horror movies, just like them, we actually do play a role in these mind events, these horror movies that we play in our minds, that take over our minds. These are not things that just happen to us. They might feel like, oh my God, I've fallen into one of my depressions. Anybody who, like me, has suffered, you know, severe depressions at times, it can feel like it's come out of the blue and taken us over and there's nothing that we've done. But actually, all mind states are at least to a great degree brought on by where we focus the mind and how we use the mind. They're not things, external events, that take over their mind. They're not things that just out of the blue occur. We have a role in them. It's not fait accompli. It's very important to remember this, because when we are in a depression, when we are in fear, when we are in anger, when we are in regret, it can feel like these are thoughts and emotions that have taken us over that we have no control over. And the Buddha did not teach a fatalistic approach to the mind. He actually was focused on giving us tools that would help us end our suffering. And so tonight I'm going to share with you another set of those tools. It's also worth using that metaphor, not only because of the protagonist in the movie, but also because of the way we watch horror movies. We forget when we're watching a horror movie that we can look away from the screen. It sounds simple, but so many of us forget that. We get sucked up by watching the protagonist walk up the stairs. There's the cutaway shot to the creaking figure sitting in the rocking chair. So we know there's somebody in the room, and then we're back identifying with the character who's walking up the stairs. And then we might see the knife or whatever, and we're even more. And we forget that we're watching a story. And that the story is not real. That any moment we can turn away and see the light projecting from the projector. We can look around if we're in a movie theater and see other people. We can look down at our, you know, just the people sitting next to us. We can become aware that there's more to life than just this horror movie that we're watching. But we forget this. And part of what the Buddha taught is to do just that. The foundations of Sati Sampujjana, clear awareness, which is part of the mind being luminous and a great part of it, is that we remember, no matter what we're engaged in, especially when we are in the times when the mind has been taken over by fear of what's going to happen to us in the future, uncertainty, doubt over what's going to happen to me? Am I going to have enough money? Am I going to, should I stay in this relationship? Should I stay in this job? When we are overcome by this story, part of what the Buddha, in fact, a great deal of what the Buddha taught, is to bring the awareness first into your body to find where you're collecting all the stress and to relax the breathing as well. Relax the body, relax the breath. Give your awareness a grounding in something that's happening right here and right now that's real. The story of anger, fear, and regret are always stories. There's always an element or a large element that's not based on what's really happening right here and right now. Generally, when we're angry with somebody, the person we're angry with isn't in the room with us. Generally, when we're frightened of something, we're frightened about something that hasn't happened yet. Generally, when we're regretting something, we're regretting something that's in the past. So all these things have in common is that they're not actually occurring right here and right now. So part of the beauty of having at least part of our awareness on the body and relaxing the breath is that we are not fully living inside of the movie. We're doing the equivalent of looking at least partially away from the movie screen. We're remembering that, after all, the mind is telling me a story right now. It's not telling me about what's actually happening. It's just telling me a story. Sometimes we'll get the body relaxed and we'll feel that we're ready to deal with this thought world head on. And when we face it, it takes us all over again and it consumes us again with the anger. I actually had like a recent event at work where I was asked to work on something that I felt was so very much beneath me. And part of me, part of the mind, kept coming up with the story of, this is not the job I agreed to work on. This is not what, you know, was in my job description. This was, you know, the story kept coming up. And for a long time, you know, I'd go back, relax the body, the story would dissipate for a while. Then when, like, the story came back up, I'd be swooped up in it again. I'd start rehearsing the speeches. I'd start being in there in the imaginary meeting where I was telling my boss off, where I was quitting and just enjoying a few weeks of idle unemployment before, you know, the fear of financial insecurity would probably take me over. But so it took a while to get to a place where I could be and work with that story. So the very first thing is continue to work with finding a comfortable breath, relaxing the parts of your body that get stressed out, so that finally you'll have a foundation for when the time does come when you can work with whatever story that's been harassing you. You'll have a part of your experience that's relaxed and real and won't allow you to get totally sucked in to the story. So, once we are ready to work with the story, the Buddha gave five processes or suggestions for working with these horror stories that we tell ourselves, our internal horror stories. The first is, while sitting and being aware of the body and the breath, watch the thought world arise. Watch how it arises. Watch what it's like, what occurs when a thought world arises. Don't allow yourself to get sucked into it. Keep an awareness on your body. The first thing that you'll notice when a thought world of horror, internal horror, fear, regret, anger arises is you'll notice that some part of your body is going to start getting stressed out again. Probably your stomach or your chest, maybe the base of your throat, maybe your jaw will start clenching. But if you keep a small part of your awareness on the body, you will see the somatic experience that occurs when a horror story arises in your head. So just watch it arise. The second part, and you can probably guess it, is watch it pass away. The good thing about this is if stress and a change in your breathing occurs when a thought world or horror story arises, then the exact opposite will occur when it passes away. You'll see that when these stories pass, you'll see that your body relaxes and your breath relaxes. And that's good news because you'll experience the fact that these mental and physical states are not very helpful. You'll experience the fact that they're causing you stress. Now, I can come up and tell each one of you that when you're worrying about what people are thinking about you, that it'll stress you out and that it's not giving you any good information and that you'd be better off not thinking about such things. and you might agree, and still you'll go right back and you'll do it. The only way that we drop habits of the mind is by experiencing over and over and over again how they bring us stress, how they don't work, how they make us uncomfortable, how they sabotage us. Those of you who've ever been in a 12-step program, this is akin to step 6 and 7, just becoming aware of behaviors that cause us stress and suffering. Very similar techniques. So just watching, seeing that something is causing us suffering, experiencing it. Now, the third is very interesting. The third, the Buddha said, is find out what these horror stories are promising us. Why are we addicted to them? There's no such a thing as a thought world that takes us over just for the sake of torturing us. Every single thing that occurs in the mind occurs because there's a part of our mind that believes that we need to think this way. For example, the need to, some of us, myself certainly included, have the need to figure out the worst possible event that could come out of any given situation. And not only to figure it out, but to envision it. To envision how horrible the future will be and exactly the different multiple forms of horror the future will take. And the reason the mind does this is not to torture, but actually it believes that by painting these pictures of how bad the future will be, I'm somehow prepared. By envisioning financial ruin, I'm somehow prepared for that inevitability. By envisioning being alone when I'm old, or envisioning not having friends, or envisioning whatever, that I'm somehow prepared. So it's important that I understand what these voices are, or these thought worlds are promising. Sometimes, I actually had a friend who would call me up from, I was working with them, and they would say, I've been thinking such and such a story in my head, and generally the stories he was thinking were very stressful, and he'd say, is it normal to think this way? As if I was, the idea was that the important thing was, is it normal? I'm here to tell you, there is no such a thing as normalcy. That's a voice in our head that justifies stressful thinking by saying, I'm normal. I'm a normal way to think. This is the way people think. People are worried all the fucking time. I should be worried all the fucking time. That's an excuse of those voices in their head that justify themselves. The only question to ask is not, is it normal? But ask yourself, is this kind of thinking causing me damage? Or is it bringing me ease? Is this kind of thinking and thought world bringing me a sense of clarity and calmness and tranquility? Or is it just bringing me long-term suffering? Sometimes it'll be a little bit of both, and then you have to weigh, what is it bringing you, more suffering or more clarity? Sure, there's sometimes when worrying about, you know, whether a job that you're thinking of taking, what could be the bad sides and what could be the good sides with the actual information you have. But weighing it shouldn't be something that occurs over and over and over and over and over and over in your mind for days. That type of weighing should be done with concrete information and something that if you don't know the answer, you then wait and see. You wait for more information. So again, becoming aware of what these voices are promising. Generally, they're promising that this is the only way I should think. It's normal to think this way. Or I'll be unprepared. Or I won't be a human being unless I beat up on myself. Or unless I slam myself with regrets, I won't ever get better at life. I will always make mistakes. Generally, the stories will tell these kinds of justifications. Once you could see what kind of justification a thought world is giving you, then you can counter it. You can say, well, in fact, when fear is telling you that you won't be prepared unless you envision every bad outcome or some of the bad outcomes of an upcoming event, you can say, well, you know what? In my past, I've never been able to predict the future accurately. So the idea that I'm going to be able to start it now is sort of a ruse. B, you could also tell yourself, I generally do well when I'm caught completely off guard by bad events. So I don't really have any need to pre-live every bad possible event that could possibly happen. You could, in the event that your brain tells you that unless you slam yourself with judgment and regret that you won't ever improve in life, you could respond to that voice, well, let me try. Let me try a different way. Let me see if instead of beating myself up, I can simply bring awareness into it. Maybe I don't have to recycle the story over and over and over again of the stupid thing I said on a date. Maybe I don't have to say over and over and over again the one thing I regretted during a job interview. Maybe I can just let it go, just having been aware once that I could have been a little bit more strategic. Maybe I don't have to hammer it into myself to learn. So you can respond to all of these. If, again, your mind tells you, well, this is the only way a human being can normally, naturally think, the response to that is, that's not the germane question. The germane question is this line of thinking bringing me suffering? And if you see that it is, that's the only issue. That's the only issue. Causing yourself suffering now in the hopes that you can get rid of suffering in the future is not a good trade. It's not. It might seem to be a good trade, but it's not a good trade. Because all you're doing is guaranteeing suffering right here and right now. The future suffering might not actually occur. But you're making sure that you suffer right here and right now. So those are some of the responses. And finally, once you see what the thought world is promising and how to respond to it, you've watched it arise and pass and see the effect on the body, the final thing is to note what kinds of other thoughts will make these thought worlds go away. What can you do to make these thought worlds stop from taking over the mind? You've generally got to catch them pretty early, which means that it's a good idea to keep some state of awareness on what's going on in your mind and your body. If you do catch that thought arising, like I would catch that thought arising of this sense of outrage at how could I be asked to do this thing at my job, when I would see that little voice, like, let's think about my job, come up, I would immediately start refocusing my mind on something that didn't take it over. I would focus it on a sense of gratitude that right now I even have a job, or gratitude that I can probably find another job if I don't like this job. I would refocus the mind on appreciating stuff that people had done for me. I would refocus the mind on thinking about stuff that I had to do on that given day rather than the story. There are many stories that we can focus the mind on that will not bring suffering. Again, there's generosity, there's goodwill towards ourselves and others, there's appreciation of the skillful things we've done, there's a sense of feeling, a sense of pride when we've acted virtuously, there's a sense of equanimity, knowing that there's always a sense of, if we've acted skillfully, we will not be allowed to fall through the cracks of life and suffer. So these are some of the stories that we can think about that don't control the mind, that don't take it over, that don't bring us suffering. So again, the five tools are watching it arise, watching it pass, understanding what a horror story in her mind is offering us, understanding what its drawbacks are, and then understanding that there are other pleasant movies that the mind can watch instead. Learning to cultivate those pleasant movies in your head. In some places they call it just practicing gratitude. Sometimes that enough is just enough to stop the mind from its habits of causing itself fear, anger, and resentment. So, that's tonight's talk on mental horror stories. I hope you got something from it. Now it's your turn to ask me any questions about any Buddhist-related subject, the meditation, or tonight's talk, or anything that's going on with you. Thanks for listening.